Welcome to episode 32 of the Never Iron Anything podcast. This podcast is an occasional chat with a buddy about a comic series or creator we are fans of. We will dissect and reflect and occasionally chuckle. My name's Tony Esmond, writer of the just-released Tony Esmond is a Movie Star and editor of The Horizon Cafe by Emanuela Molari. Today we have a returning guest, the Lord High Executioner of Dundee and creator of the recently released Mountain Rescue, which I very much enjoyed and did chuckle about just the other day. It's Mr. Dave Robertson. Hey, Dave.
Hello.
How's it going, man?
How are you?
How's it going?
Very well, thank you. Thank you. It's great.
Good.
All the better for hearing you.
Thank you, my love. Thank you. I very much enjoyed Mountain Rescue, and just the last strip. I don't know why. I just read the last strip first, and it made me just laugh out loud. The Mr. T one, but we'll have a talk about
the
that.
A-team.
Exactly. We'll have a talk about that in a bit. But first off, what is the comic you have chosen to talk about today?
The comic I've chosen is Star Wars issue 80, called Ellie. From 1984.
Yes. Now, this holds a special point in Star Wars history, doesn't it, as I understand it? Is that right?
Yeah, I guess it does. It does hold a point. You mean in the timeline of the...
Yeah, because isn't it the last comic before Jedi comes out?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah.
They actually did a... with the previous series, because they would always do Star Wars comics not having any idea what was going to come up in the next film. So they couldn't really say anything about anything because they didn't know anything.
Yeah, no one would tell them anything. And I think it's, I can't remember how many times, but I've certainly seen at least once where Luke and Leia make out quite heavily because nobody told them what was going to happen. Yeah,
that's right. Luke's definitely interested.
So let's go back to the start, man. How and why are you, if you are a Star Wars fan?
Oh, well, I am. Anybody that knows me knows I'm a huge Star Wars fan. Always have been. I was just the great age for it when it came out. You know, I was maybe six or something when it came out. Saw it and it just blew my mind, you know, forever. And then 10 years later or so, when it was all finished, I refused to give it up, you know.
Yeah.
So all my pals were, you know, Aliens, man, or whatever. And I was still sitting going, yeah, it's good and everything, but it's no Darth Vader, is it?
No Ewoks. Where are the Ewoks?
Yeah, exactly. So I was kind of a diehard Star Wars fan forever.
Okay. Now, it's a weird one for me because I'm a big fan of the first two movies. I saw Star Wars in Leicester Square. My dad took me. I think I was 10, 9 or 10. My father took me along, and I remember there being a queue outside the cinema. I've told this story before, but I remember there was a smaller person in the queue. I'm not sure the politically correct term. Who was sort of entertaining the queue. Like, you used to get in Leicester Square back then, you used to get sort of street entertainers and magicians and stuff like that. And my dad telling me that he was actually the actor who played the robot in Star Wars, meaning R2-D2. And for years I believed that. I used to tell my friends at school that I met R2-D2 at the screening. And it just turns out to be a load of nonsense that my dad made up just to cheer me up in the queue, you know. But I love the movies, and I read the books. I don't know about you, but I read the Han. There's a load of Han Solo books, aren't there? There's Spaces at World's End or something like that. I've got them somewhere here.
That's right, Star's End. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, there's three
featuring the robot called the Bollocks.
Was there? Okay, it's been a while. And I read
Bollux.
Oh, I never knew that. Okay. Couldn't remember that one. And Splinter of a Mind's Eye was the other one that we all read, wasn't it? Because there was very little at the time to get away with and read. And then there was I had a novel-sized adaption of Empire, which was the Al Williamson art. I read that to death. But on that, I didn't really read the comics. I think I read the first few in a weekly version of it. The Star Wars Weekly that we had out in England or in Britain. And I kind of stopped there. I think Carmine Infantino drew quite a big chunk of it after Chaykin. And I didn't really continue. I don't know why. I was reading everything else in the world. I don't know why. I think in my head I kind of thought, well, I've got the movies. Why do I need the comics? You know.
Yeah.
But you did you read it in the UK reprint?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
I read the Star Wars Empire and Jedi comics. I mean, not getting it every week, but going through spells of reading bunches of it.
Yeah.
And this story fell into that as well.
Okay.
I read that in Return of the Jedi Weekly.
Can I ask why this one in particular you chose? Because this is your third time on the show, and we've had Warlock, the collection of Warlock, and we had some James Kolchaka. You know, two comics I can't think of more different, to be fair. And now a Star Wars. There are three. I know you're a huge comics fan, so it doesn't surprise me that you've read them all, but I just wondered why you chose this one.
Well, I chose this one because when they were making the transition from Star Wars, the movies, the storyline after Star Wars,
yeah.
then they ran the Al Williamson adaptation over six issues or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And so while that was happening, the Marvel comics, the Marvel Star Wars comics storyline, you might call it, that ran in between the films,
yeah,
that went on hold while they ran the adaptation. And then when they were finished with the adaptation, their storyline started up again, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I get you.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, yeah.
So they were kind of clever about it when it came to going from Empire to Jedi. They ran the Jedi adaptation in its own separate miniseries.
Yeah, that's right.
And they used the four issues of the Star Wars comic. It didn't immediately jump to after Return of the Jedi. It finished off the storylines using stuff from the Jedi film now, because they'd seen it.
Right.
So they were so although it was before Jedi, they were mentioning like Admiral Akbar.
Yes.
And they were looking for the Bothan tapes and stuff like that. So it was kind of a clever way to go about it,
yeah.
I thought.
Yeah, I think for those who don't know, Admiral Akbar gets his first mention in this comic, doesn't he, I think? Is that right?
I think simultaneously they also had him in the newspaper strip.
Ah, okay. Oh, interesting.
By Al Williamson.
Yeah.
Which was also coming out before the movie showed him. And regarding me choosing this one specifically, this story, I have a great memory of it. Sitting, you know, Cheers used to be on on Friday nights on Channel 4, and I can remember watching. And the Return of the Jedi Weekly dragged the stories on so long. At this point, you were getting like three pages of a story.
Yeah.
So this one issue lasted like six weekly issues. And I can remember reading them every week and Cheers being on. So it's just a nice little memory.
Yeah, I get you. And it's a nice contained story. We'll go through it in a bit in a minute, but there's a nice, it's not large in scale. It's not a broad canvas. It's not like Empire or something. It's all contained, isn't it? It's a nice, you can imagine they've kind of painted themselves into a corner because they don't really know what's happening in the movies. So they have to keep it slightly smaller sometimes, I think.
Yeah, and I think you did mention before that you hadn't really read any Star Wars comics,
yeah.
So that also made me think this one could work for you without having read all the, you know, 79 issues before.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about it. So the Star Wars comic, this one, issue 80, is plot and script by Jo Duffy. Where's Jo Duffy, eh? I used to love her writing. She's brilliant. We'll talk about it in a minute. Ron Frenz on breakdowns. Tom Palmer on finishes, Joe Rosen letterer, Glynis Ween, return of Glynis. Glynis coloured so much stuff back then as colourist. Louise Jones, now Louise Simonson, as editor, and Jim Shooter as editor in chief. And the cover was by Friends and Palmer. We're going to talk a little bit about all the artists, but knowing Friends and knowing Palmer's work, I'm saying this leans so much more heavily on the inker's style than the penciler's. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, it's kind of a running thing throughout the Star Wars comic that Tom Palmer came on and inked everybody, including Walt Simonson, Al Williamson, Ron Frenz, and others. And he really kept a look to the, yeah, the series as it went along. And this one fits into that as well.
It really does, doesn't it?
You definitely, yeah, you look and go, it's Tom Palmer, you know.
Yep, exactly. And he had that, he did that on the Avengers. He did that on a few things. He's slightly more contained in when he works on Gene Colan's stuff and maybe Neil Adams' stuff. But in this, it's so different from what I'm used to from Friends. And I like Friends' work. He's slightly more cartoony than this style, I think.
Yeah, yeah, he's good. He was good on Spider-Man. He was doing his Steve Ditko Spider-Man, yeah, kind of impersonation. That was great.
Yeah. So let's pin down a bit on the story before we get into the peaks and troughs of the creative sort of side of things. So I'll give a little summary of what happens here. Luke, Leia, and C-3PO, they're on an Imperial base that's off limits to civilians. They're looking for an agent called Tay Vanis. He has plans for a new Imperial super weapon. Yeah. As soon as I read that, I thought, how is this going to clash with Rogue One? There's a certain clash, is there?
Do you know, I watched Rogue One once, hated it, and I've never thought about it ever since. Is,
yeah,
that okay?
That's fine, man. No, I'm not a big fan. I got slightly sort of put off by Star Wars. I was drawn up in the hype for the episode one and kind of enjoyed it for the spectacle that it was, and then realized it was dreck. And then I kind of just watched them because I felt like robotized into watching them sometimes. And you, like you, I've, mm-hmm, only seen Rogue One once. I'm sure it's a very good film. Donnie Yen's in it. I quite like him. But the other films just seem to be like a load of kids arguing to me. I didn't really get it. I don't know. The bloke who ran my local comic shop for a while, I tried to talk him about comics and he just wanted to talk about Star Wars. And to be fair, he was just a bumptious idiot and it kind of put me off.
That'll happen if you get the wrong guy, you know. You'll turn it off, whatever it is.
Yeah. So they can't find him, but they do come across a silver android called Ellie, aka LE914. And Ellie is in charge of manifests on the base. She's clearly a sexy lady robot. Are we saying that? I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think so.
That's fair to say.
Yeah.
Like, what's her name? Maria from Metropolis.
Yeah, very like that. Yeah, yeah, definitely. She takes him to a castle where Vanis may be. On the way there, they find Vanis's crashed X-Wing, and it turns out that Vader was on his tail. It turns out that Ellie is the droid with the tapes, though, so we discover, oh no, well, she's playing a game here. She goes missing, and they creep into the base, and they're interrupted by a hologram of Vader. And Vader is two steps ahead of everyone, and he shows them the dead body of Vanis. Ellie turns back up, and there's a tragic moment at the end where she finds the dead body of Vanis, and she, I think the implications is she explodes. Is that right? Is that how it goes?
That's what I took from it. Yeah,
yeah.
She just wiped herself and Tay Vanis out.
Yeah. What is there anything in the lead up to this? Was this Vanis thing happening on the run up to this issue, Dave, or is it a self, you know, just one issue, one and done?
No, there'd definitely been mention of looking for Tay Vanis. It was a bit more vague. You can tell that, yeah, they've watched Return of the Jedi. You went, okay, they've went for the Bothan tapes thing.
Right.
They, yeah, were looking. I remember they were looking for Tay Vanis and Yom Argo, I think was his name. There was two rebels. And then they were looking for the little tapes and things. And I think it just happened to, you know, they tied it together.
Yeah. I get
so
you.
It was well done, yeah.
So this is kind of the end of the period before Jedi, and then we get Jedi, and then we kind of get a different storyline after that. So it is quite conclusive in its ending.
Yeah.
And is tragic. It's got that tragic, there's an implication that he was her master, but she loved him. She objects. She actually goes against humans' orders in it, doesn't she, at one point?
That's right, yeah, she does, yeah.
So there's an implication there's something more to their relationship. Am I reading too much into that, or?
I think there's affection, yeah, there's affection, right, from her anyway towards him.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say that.
Okay, yeah.
You get that a lot with robots in Star Wars, though. They're not just machines, you know?
Yeah, yeah, there's that. relationship. There's that symbiosis, isn't there, almost with Luke and R2 and stuff. Yeah. Yeah. I found it for a Star Wars comic, quite a moving comic, unusually. It's not like, well, there's a lightsaber fight in it and stuff, but there's a real arc of emotion in it, and it ends on a really nice like story and visual image of C-3PO in the rain, with the rain sort of collecting under his eye sockets and stuff, and it's a really well done page. There's a lot of really well set up pages in this issue, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. It is, in tone, it's quite somber.
Yeah.
Which is quite an interesting decision to make for a Star Wars comic.
Yeah.
It's not a rah-rah hooray, we've blown everything up great kind of story.
Yeah, it's not, is it?
No, and it's quite the poetic kind of crying C-3PO at the end that you're talking about. Yeah. I mean, he's not crying, but it looks like he could be.
Yeah.
In the rain. It is well done, yeah.
Yeah, no, I really like
it. I think it's unique in the series, I think.
Really? Okay.
I think Mary Jo Duffy is a great writer on Star Wars.
Yeah.
She does a lot of great humour.
Okay.
And she really seems to be into the characters and uses them well.
Yeah.
Makes up good new characters as well for the series.
Yeah, which is kind of a problem now, isn't it? Because this isn't considered canon. They've kind of said it's classic Star Wars but shouldn't be considered canon. Is that right?
Yeah, I think you're right, but again, I've switched off, Tony.
Yeah,
you know?
I get you, man.
I mean,
yeah.
if you say to me this clashes with Rogue One, well, I mean, I don't care about that, you know.
Yes.
And if somebody says this isn't canon anymore, I'm like, I don't care if it's canon or not. Is it good?
Good.
And to me, it's good, so thank you.
you
can think it's
on,
canon or not. I'm no interest.
You don't give
in
a fuck.
Yeah,
I agree with you. That's the best way.
No,
to
I mean, it. does it fit in with episode 14 of the Rebels cartoon that's on Disney Plus? You know, I'll let you worry about that. Okay.
So, you and I, our interest is in comics. We could everything else is secondary. Am I right in saying that, David? This is a good comic. This is a really good comic.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love Star Wars as its own thing as well.
Right.
And I loved comics, so it was a natural I would read these. But I am not following every Star Wars thing that's coming out now.
Yeah, I don't think you could. I think you'd have to. It'd have to be a full time job, wouldn't it? With all the, there's probably a fucking Lego thing somewhere or other. You know what I mean? It's like,
oh, there will be. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, as soon as I think George Lucas sold it and said, "I'm not making the last three. I've sold it now. Thanks," and went away to live his life.
Yeah.
I kind of thought, well, I'll watch the last three because there was always supposed to be nine.
Right.
But they're going to be not. You know, it's not the real guy doing it anymore.
Yeah.
The guy that knows the story, you know?
Yeah, you need that.
So these are the...
You need that single vision, don't you, I think, sometimes with these sort of things to carry on. And that's why
for me,
I agree.
Yeah. So you're right. This comic isn't canon, but luckily we couldn't care less.
Yeah.
Because it's really good.
It is. Let's talk a little bit about Jo Duffy. So Mary Jo Duffy is her full name, born in New York, 1954. I wondered in the blokey times of the 70s and 80s whether she chose the name Jo Duffy as a sort of non-specific gendered name to get, you know, we saw that quite a lot, didn't we? I mean, I couldn't care a fig, but some people may or may not worry about it. I never knew if she was male or female. And to be fair, I never worried. I never considered, you know, I never had a visual image of her in my head when I was reading the stuff. I read her first in Power Man and Iron Fist, or I first enjoyed her stuff, which is really good. Have you read any of that stuff?
I have read bits here and there, yeah.
Yes.
But not a lot.
That's a great series, man. She's good. She did... I think her first published thing in Marvel Comics is she wrote a letter in as a fan, as a teenager, which is great to know, I think, sometimes. I do appreciate that. She also wrote some Conan. She wrote Fallen Angels, which was a sort of mutant spin-off. She wrote some Wolverine, and she wrote, surprisingly, the Francis of Assisi biography comic. Probably one in your long boxes there, Dave. she wrote...
I'll dig that out, yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next time. She co-wrote Defenders and The Order with Kurt Busiek. And sadly, what is going on in the world? She now works as I understand it, as a receptionist at US Immigration in New York. Like, what a shame.
Yeah. It's something, isn't it? Yeah. I don't know. What can I say? Don't get me started. you know, Marvel rakes in billions on these characters and everything.
Yeah.
That they've created, you know?
Yeah. And I absolutely adore her writing, but apparently she's got her fingers in a couple of sort of indie pies around some comics making stuff that's sort of we're waiting to see. But I'm hoping that comes out. It's certainly something I'll buy, even just for nostalgia content. And I'm sure she's very good. I think I'm friends with her on Facebook. She posts quite a lot of stuff on there. I think we're sort of friends.
Yeah,
yeah.
Do you know they had Roy Thomas and Archie Goodwin?
Yep.
And. They had a lot of great writers on this series, but she was the best.
Okay.
I mean, that was a lot of good competition.
Yeah.
But her stories were just excellent.
Yeah.
And always enjoyed them.
Let's talk a little bit about the writing in this, because she uses a couple of techniques which I really liked in this. There's some pages. I mean, it starts on a quiet or a no-worded panel, doesn't it? The splash, the first entry page is a single image, and there's no speech in it, which I really like that. And it shows Luke sort of hiding behind a door with his gun ready to fire if the stormtroopers discovered him. Quite an iconic image, and a lovely laid out one with a really good title, but no speech.
No, it's really dramatic. Grabs you right away.
It really does, doesn't it? Yeah. Are you reading the single issue, or are you reading it in a trade, or...?
I've got the single issue here.
Oh, nice. Okay, I'm reading it on the
I've got my six Return of the Jedi weeklies as well.
Good man.
Less helpfully, but they're here.
Yeah. So we get a tense scene at the start where they're hiding, and there's that classic thing where Leia puts her hand over C-3PO's mouth. Not that it would make any difference because nothing's moving. But
I know. I love that. Yeah, that's great.
It seems to be a bit of a go-to. Without
that's funny.
Yeah. But then we get quite a wordy couple of pages. It becomes quite exposition-y, doesn't it? Probably more words on a page. I'm looking at page 4 where they walk into the hangar and you've got the TIE fighters above them. And it's quite wordy, isn't it?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
They're laying out all the story for us there.
Yeah, they are. Which I don't mind, because in the old Stan tradition, each comic could be a reader's first comic and all that sort of thing. So I don't mind that. It's cool. I was coming in at that issue, and I needed to know what's going on. So that's fine. But I notice that it's either quite wordy or quite silent. So we get a series of silent moments. So I wrote these down as they come up. So you get the opening page. You get the hiding from the stormtroopers moment. You get, to a certain extent, Luke's lightsaber fight. You get the sacrifice at the end with Ellie. And you get the single panel of finding Vanis where he's dead on the floor. She uses the quiet to emphasise scenes and emotional beats, I think, a lot, which I liked in the way she wrote that.
Yeah.
There's definitely...
Yeah, it's a good mix.
It really is, yeah. And she also counterpoints quite a wordy... they're trying to sting their way into... To find someone, aren't they? They're trying to con their way through. Quite a wordy little con scene, but then it switches quickly into action. And I think the idea that Shooter had back then is you had to have so much action in a comic, and I think it continued through a number of editors. And they do that, but they don't do it. It's not abrupt or anything. It moves. There's a chorus and there's a verse to this comic. You know, there's a wordy bit, and then there's a high bit of action, and there's another wordy bit, I think. It works well.
Yeah, yeah, it does. Hmm. And the dialogue bits, they're all in character, you know?
Yeah, they really are.
I would say. You're getting an idea of who everyone is. And then when it goes into the long panels with Luke Skywalker hitting all the stormtroopers with his lightsaber.
Yeah.
And the arms are coming off, and
there's a
pretty strong idea that he's chopped that stormtrooper's head off.
There is, isn't
you
there?
You don't see the head, but there's, you know, it's a good action page, and it's also quite hardcore.
I mean, you
didn't really have much of that going on. The lightsaber's on flesh.
You didn't, did you?
In the comic,
no. And there's an arm flying off. All we're missing is there's an implication of
and he's going,
blood.
Well, it's all red behind them, so
the
implication is there.
The strong four panels, lovely bit of choreography between them all, works really well, flows really well. But yeah, you're right, man, I didn't notice that before. I suppose the thing is that what did they have to work off? You know, if you go and write a Star Wars comic now, you've got to spend a year in a university studying a degree on Star Wars. But back then you had to you had a couple of movies and a couple of novels and probably someone told you something and that would be about it, wouldn't it? You know, 4 hours a movie. And
you know, it's another example of that little trick they did here where when this comic's coming out, we're probably 3 or 4 months since the movie now.
Yeah.
And so they're introducing the idea that Luke isn't the way he was at the end of Empire Strikes Back now. He's a badass now, you know?
Yeah, which is
the way we see him in...
in Jedi. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they're introducing that. He will just go around killing 10 people, you know?
Yeah. Now...
without much of a sweat.
Did he have a lightsaber at the end of Empire? I can't remember.
No, he did. And no, he didn't, because it was in his hand that he lost.
Yeah.
And then in Jedi, he just has it. It's just he's made another one.
Right, so that could be this one. It's just they've maybe got the colour wrong or something. Not to be a super nerd, but yeah.
They kind of played on it in the Return of the Jedi film because he comes in and he doesn't have his saber for the first half hour or so.
Right.
And he's about to be killed. And then in the R2-D2.
Yes, of course.
Has been holding it.
Yeah. Above the that's above the big vagina thing, isn't it? Is that right?
You can say that. It was the Sarlacc.
Thank you. That's what I was looking for. Thank you, Dave. I knew the reason you're here. Yeah, so no.
But they did I was just a way to add another layer of Star Wars nerd on, because they did film a scene at the beginning of Jedi where Luke finishes making his lightsaber and puts it into R2-D2.
Oh, okay.
And it was just a rumour for decades that had been filmed. And there was even footage of people asking Mark Hamill, did this happen? And he's like, no, I don't remember that. That didn't happen. And then about 10 years ago, the DVDs came out and it's an extra on the DVD.
He probably couldn't remember. So, God bless him. Do you know what I mean?
No, he couldn't remember it. Yeah.
They're all partying. Yeah, I did that. Partying, making the holiday special, you know, off their heads.
Yeah.
I've only watched that holiday special once. I think that's enough for me. But,
Oh, it's unbelievable. Oh, the cartoon is good, though. The little 10-minute cartoon is actually great. I watch that all the time.
Oh, I remember that.
I don't watch any of the rest of it, but the cartoon's excellent.
Yeah, good stuff. Right.
And they're all in it. They're all voicing it. You know, Harrison Ford and everything.
Okay.
James Earl Jones.
I watched it on a bootleg VHS video I bought at a Comic Mart in the late 90s, I think. I think that's the only time I've ever watched it, which I now don't own a video player, so I can't even play it, but...
Well, it's on YouTube now, like everything else.
True. Yeah, very true, man. Yeah. So I'm going to say this. I know this is slightly controversial, but this feels like proper Star Wars to me, I have to say. There's a tension. You're right. They get the characters right. Luke's a kid, isn't he? But he has gravitas as well. He has that dangerous, you know, which they play on, that dangerous side. And Leia is... She's a leader already in this, isn't she? She knows what she's doing. She's a sort of arse kicker. It feels... the reason I enjoyed it so much when I read it for the first time just the other day was it just felt like I was coming home again to Star Wars, the old Star Wars I remember. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, no.
That's good, yeah.
Yeah, really good, man. Let's talk a little bit about Marvel's... Sorry, man.
So I was going to say, I kind of accept all the Marvel Star Wars comics as being... part of the story because I was reading them as at the time.
Right, I get you. Yeah.
They're in there, and I do see things. The Mandalorian TV show that's out now.
Yeah.
I've seen some of that, okay. And there's one little bit in it where they appear in this Imperial troop transport, and it was a toy that Kenner made back in the late 70s.
Oh, right.
And they had it in one of these Marvel comics to help sell it. The troopers would go around in that thing. And it looked ridiculous. It was never in the movies, you know?
Yeah.
But what do you know? They threw it in the Mandalorian show. So this storyline was going on, and I was like, yeah, ho-hum. And then the troop transport turned up, and I was like, whoa! Where's the troop transport?
So what was the bloody rabbit they had in the comic? We need that back, don't we?
Ah, Jackson.
I like that. I remember that. He's great. Yeah, and that was Carmine Infantino drawing that. I love Carmine's work. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember him. People remember him for The Flash, but this is, he did some good work on this stuff.
Oh yeah, he was a good artist. He was kind of wonky.
Yeah.
I think you had to get used to it, yeah. But he was great.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I didn't quite get him. The same as way I didn't quite get Gene Colan. And it took me growing up a bit to realise that he did know what he was doing. And it was just a style, and, yeah. But it did work. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, I love it now. Yeah. It's an era now. That you kind of think of the between Star Wars and Empire comics, that's Carmine.
Yeah, okay.
Infantino.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the history of the Star Wars comics. So there was 107 issues of this, plus three annuals, which is a good run. It's not an outstanding run. They did a miniseries of... Now, these are cartoons. I understand. I haven't seen this. Droids and Ewoks. Were they cartoons that you're aware of, or...?
They were cartoons, yeah. They were. And they sort of came at a time when I had probably... funnily enough, I was just talking to the Comic Smell guys about this. that I used to get every Christmas, you know, we would get annuals and all that if we were lucky enough.
Yeah, I used
to
love getting annuals.
So I always had the Star Wars annual. I loved it. So by this point, I had like eight of them or something. And okay, I'll definitely get this year's annual, you know. So I went out to look in the shop, and there it was, Star Wars annual featuring Ewoks, and there was a big huge cartoon drawing of an Ewoks on the front, and by this point I'd sort of turned 13, you know.
Yeah.
So I loved the Star Wars annuals. I did want the latest one to keep up the collection, but I remember just looking in the shop and thinking, I can't ask for that for Christmas, you know. I don't if I say I want that, I'm lying.
Yeah,
you know?
Okay, yeah.
And to be honest, it still bothers me. I still look it up on eBay every so often and think, I've got every annual except that last one.
Because
Star Wars featuring Ewoks.
Was it because the popularity of Star Wars dropped off a bit for a period, do you think? Or?
Well, it's because George Lucas finished Return of the Jedi and went, right, I'll make more later on sometime.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he had no plans to do it because it had practically killed him making these three.
Yeah.
So they ran and made these TV cartoons and things to keep the money ticking over.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah. Marvel had an interesting relationship with Star Wars, which obviously they've built up again recently. So they met with Stan Lee initially, and Stan didn't want it. He sort of turned it down as a comic series. And it took Roy Thomas to convince Stan to go back into a second meeting to take a second look at it, and eventually he did take it. Issues 1-6 of the original adaption. My copy of issue 1 is the Marvel UK issue 1, so which would have been shorter. I remember at school there's a scene in the comic that Chaykin draws where Princess Leia almost gets shot in the tit. And I remember this was something that me and my mates decided she was shot in the tits in the movie. So I think we kind of read it before we saw the movie, maybe. I can't remember. It's odd. It's many years ago, so I don't know.
Mm.
As I say, I ran for 107. We had a couple of Treasury editions, and obviously Marvel UK ran the story, ran Star Wars Weekly, ran for a long time. And then we had Blackthorn Publishing, which I wasn't aware of until I looked it up today. And they held the license between 87 and 88 and did some 3D comics of them, which I've never seen. And then Dark Horse had it for a long run between 1990 and 2014. And then Marvel bought the rights in 2014 and started publishing it as of 2015. And are still going with it. Have you read any of those, the new stuff?
I want to say that I was disappointed when Marvel finished with it.
Right, okay.
And angry at them.
Right.
And when Blackthorn did the 3D Star Wars comics, I ran into the comic shop and punched people out of the way.
Oh, right,
in order
okay.
to get to that.
Right.
Oh, yeah. That was the 10th anniversary series.
Right, okay.
And they did three of them.
Right.
And then that was it. And then Marvel announced they were bringing it back with Cam Kennedy, Tom Veitch.
Oh, I love the Cam Kennedy
stuff.
Yeah.
before that came out, though, something went wrong with the license and Dark Horse got it.
Right.
But it was actually announced by Marvel as them bringing back the Star Wars comic in 1990. It's in one of the Marvel Age annuals.
Oh, okay, right.
And there's a little bit of promotional art that Cam Kennedy did that was never put anywhere else because Dark Horse ended up publishing it.
Yeah, because he ended up working on quite a few issues, didn't he, for Dark Horse on the Star Wars titles. Is that right?
Yeah, he did two six-issue series and some other things here and there as well, Boba Fett, one-off.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's all fully painted stuff he did.
He does. I love Cam Kennedy's art, man. It's so good. I was looking at him in that Masters of British Comic Art the other day, and it's absolutely gorgeous. Yeah. And then, like you say, Marvel got it back because of the Disney situation. So Disney bought... I think they bought Marvel and then they bought Star Wars and they went, well, why are we letting another company publish the comic when we own Star Wars? We own Marvel, sorry.
That's right, yeah.
And that's when Marvel sort of took it on. I hear good things. I hear that, is it the series Vader Down? I hear that's good. I think I might even have a couple of copies of it on Comixology, but I've never read it. It's maybe one day when I run out of comics to read.
There was a new Star Wars number one that they did when Marvel started bringing it out again. Right. And, yeah, I thought I'll get it to see what it's like, you know.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. It's all sort of... The thing is, it's the one I read was based in between Star Wars and Empire again.
That's what
you know?
I heard about, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And I kind of thought, I've done all this, you know. I did all this at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, how many more comics do I need to read? And it's like the day after, you know, the day after the destruction of the Death Star. You think, oh, I've been to this day like four times now, you know. I know what I'm.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, I guess I'm just an old man. And, you know, why I need to keep reading, it's all a bit forced, you know. I'm not excited about it.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah, it's changed direction a bit, isn't it? It somehow, and I know Marvel was a big deal, and I know the first and the second and third movies made a lot of money, but it just seems to be a bit more corporate to me these days. I don't know if I'm feeling it quite as much. There was a definitive... mood to Star Wars that I sort of latched onto when I saw the movies and read the novels, and I'm not feeling it these days. It's my the old cynical me, I suppose. But
yeah. And I think because it was so limited, there was only like you know at the end there was three films.
Yeah.
So it was up to you to make up a lot of what it was about, what it meant to you. Yeah. Now it's just relentless, you know. And also, even the good stuff now is stuff that I used to watch Star Wars, and it was George Lucas making it. And even if I was thinking, I'm not sure about this, at least I know, you know, I knew he made up Star Wars. So even if I wasn't sure, he was right because he'd made it up.
Yeah, yeah, he knows. Yeah.
Now I watch things and it's like, well, the example I gave earlier, I'm sitting watching it and I go, oh, there's the troop transporter toys, put it in it, ha ha. It's like, well, that's good, but that just means it's some dork the same age as
yeah,
me, you know. That,
yeah.
That liked that when he was growing up, and now he's put it in, so I could have done that.
Yeah.
What about the real last three, you know? Come on, George. Ruin another 10 years of your life and do the proper 7, 8, 9.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, it's, you're right, though. Nerds are running the world now, aren't they? You know, everything's got to have a callback somewhere. There's got to be a poster in the background, or everything's got to have that, haven't they? Yeah. should we talk a little bit about Ron Frenz's art? So I'm a fan of Ron's work. He was born in 1960 in Pittsburgh. He's probably most famous for his Spider-Man and his Spider-Girl run. He co-created Spider-Girl with Tom DeFalco. I think they're great pals. His first comic was Kazar in Kazar the Savage number 16. He did some Star Wars. He did some Further Adventures of Indiana Jones. Now, you must have read those Indiana Jones comics as well, did you?
Yeah, I did. A fair amount of them were reprinted in Britain as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Indiana Jones Monthly. Actually, they were backup strips as well in Star Wars and...
I think that might be where I saw
Spider-Man, I think.
Yeah, because John Byrne worked on some, didn't he? There's some John Byrne.
Yeah, he did.
Some of them are really good. They're really well done.
Steve Ditko did
that's
a good
right,
few as well.
He did, didn't he? I was just realising that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they were good. Yeah. The Indiana Jones comics were good at the time.
Yeah, and then to me it was part of the same fandom. I kind of felt that it was also part of the Star Wars fandom. I know there's Harrison Ford and Lucas as well, but it just seemed part and parcel of what I was kind of into. Ron Frenz also drew The Kid Who Collected Spider-Man in this Amazing Spider-Man 248, which is an amazing issue. incredibly touching issue.
Yeah.
He showed Shooter sample pages of a character he and his friends had made up, and that's how he got in there. He was a huge fan of John Buscema, which you can really see in his work. And it eventually was Al Milgram and Louise Jones who found his art in a folder after Shooter had sort of put it away to remember later, and called him in to get a job. There's a really good kayfabe interview with him. Have you seen it?
I think I have, yeah.
It's one of those, they call them shoot interviews or something like that, don't they?
Yeah, I did watch that. Yeah.
It's quite a long one, and he's very honest and very funny and very engaging and very businesslike. He knows what he's doing, I think. I most recently read him in, I think, The Blue Baron, which is Sit Comics, which I read about a year ago, and it's really good. It's exactly the same. He's drawing exactly the same way he drew in the 80s, and there's a real warmness to what he does. He talks quite a lot about the way he deals with breakdowns. So he talks about different stages in pencils, and he alludes to the fact that he took different payment in how he drew the pencils. So breakdowns, he might get one. Pencils, he might get a different payment. Full pencils, he might get a different payment. And then generally, he was inked by other people. So it'd be interesting to see how much of these pages he actually drew. Because in that interview, he says breakdowns can be as simple as stick people. I'm sure they weren't for him, but that's what he says. Because I think he's credited as breakdowns in the first page. I think rather than pencils, they actually credit him with breakdowns compared to finishers.
That's right, yeah. Tom Palmer, finisher, yeah.
There's a heavy Palmer influence on the page, I think. But
which is good.
Ron Friend's still busy. He's still another Facebook friend of mine, and he's always putting commissions up, and he's drawing these sitcom comics stuff, Blue Baron, and some other stuff, and he's still going. And I'd read a Spider-Man monthly by him, the drop of a hat, man. He's just a good storyteller. A bit like Bagley or someone like that to me.
I often think Ron Friend's on Spider-Man mid 80s is kind of the last latest hot artist I was on board for.
Okay.
You know, well, you had Mazza Kelly and all that, but I kind of was switched on to McFarlane, you know, Liefeld, and they were the great artists now, and I just, I didn't like them.
Yeah.
But Ron Friends, I was into that. I mean, I could see that he was kind of doing Steve Ditko. At the same time, Marvel Tales was reprinting Steve Ditko Spider-Man.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember those.
So I was getting both. I was getting the two of them.
Yeah.
And I thought they were both good. But then, because McFarlane, well, I won't start bashing McFarlane, but he started drawing the Hulk, which I was always buying. And I thought, I don't like this guy. You know, I couldn't wait on him getting off the Hulk. And then he went on Spider-Man and was like the hottest thing ever, eh? And people still love Todd McFarlane. Just a taste thing. He doesn't do it for me.
Yeah, I mean, I remember those days. We've talked about this before, Dave. I think we talked about it in a pub once. But I remember thinking, what does everyone see in this stuff? You know, from a kid who grew up on Buscema and, you know, all these Adams and these sort of people, I'm like, what is this disfigurement that's on the page in front of me? It's just...
It was kind of like brainless excitement or something.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? It was just not the characters I knew.
It's just like, why?
Yeah, right up in your face in the camera. Yeah, and
you can sort of tell that they liked Kirby and they sort of took all the most over-the-top aspects of Kirby, maybe. And I don't know, there was nothing underneath it. Not for me.
Yeah, no, I agree, man.
I always seem to end up moaning about people on this. But what I was trying to say is Ron Friends was really good. I liked Ron Friends.
We love Ron Friends. That's the positivity that's coming out of this
podcast. That's the takeaway.
Yeah, give him some work.
I often think I would like to commission Ron to draw that page of Luke hitting all the troopers.
Yeah.
I think I'd like a recreation of that from Ron Friends.
Do you know what? I just kind of tried in my head to visualise how Ron would draw it, and having read so much of his stuff, you know, it becomes sort of slightly imprinted in your brain. I mean, Spider-Girl ran for donkey's years. I know it kept getting cancelled or under threat of cancellation. But that layout is very him. I can see it now. I don't know why I didn't see this before. The movement in those panels is something you saw in his Spider-Man and his Spider-Girl, and even his Thunderstrike, which I have to say is not a bad fucking comic. Everyone goes, oh, 90s Thunderstrike. Well, they don't appreciate where it started. It's actually pretty good. I think it got a bad name because it had some sort of mad foil cover to start with. But the Eric Masterson Blue Collar Worker was actually a pretty good comic. I really enjoyed it. I actually looked to see if I could buy it. I get carried away when I do the research for these. I looked to see if I could buy it in trade. Fortunately, I didn't spend loads of money because it was out of print, but I think I've got it on the Marvel app, so I will give it another read. But yeah, if anyone's looking for that, yeah, and I see that now in some of the layouts. Yeah, and it is very Palmer. The page is drenched in Palmer ink and style, but I genuinely can see the Friends layouts there now that you say that. Yeah. Okay. So if there any, we're going to move on and talk about your comic in a second, dude. I mean, we've done well. That's a 22-page comic. We've talked about that for 45 minutes. We don't do badly on here, do we? But if you had to, let's say if you, someone said to you, right, here's a load of artwork, or, you know, I'll draw a redraw this page for you for your character. Which is your favourite layout of all the pages?
Well, the opening page is good. That sets it up right away.
Yeah.
I'd probably have to say the one I just mentioned, the Luke. What you said is right. The pages in here are laid out very well.
Yeah, they really are, aren't they? Yeah, he uses that horizontal panel well. Yeah.
Yeah, the storytelling is all really good in each page, and it looks good. I mean, like, when you open the door and T. Vanis is lying there, I mean, that's brutal.
It is. It's a shock, isn't it?
The way he looks.
And it's more brutal because you realise he's been there for ages. And he's drawn with his eyes open as well. It's sort of,
It's like he says something like he's still a person.
You know?
And that, I remember, I mean, what would I have been reading this, 11 or so?
Yeah.
So you're like, he's still a person. What does that mean? Oh, geez. You know, he's still there. He's still there in some sense.
Yeah.
You know, so, do you know, there's one more thing on rereading this I wanted to mention.
Okay, please, yeah.
Before we move on. When we get to the end and there's that part after Ellie has self-destructed, and so they're all outside the jail cell and they're sad, and then Luke says, come on, let's find this castle's main power station before we go. They deserve some kind of monument. And then you turn the page, you know, and the whole place blows up. It's like the mission's finished, they got the Bothan tapes. They know everything, but before we go, let's just kill everybody here.
Yeah, fucking vengeance.
He's
chopping off people's arms and he's blowing up whole buildings. Like, it's the old story about there's probably a couple of cleaners in there and somebody works in the canteen. They don't deserve it. You know, it's like,
so that was...
That
was notable, I thought. And that was kind of unusual for Mary Jo Duffy to be writing that kind of thing.
Right, okay.
She kept it light most of the time, but then, as you see here, she can get heavy as well. She was just a great writer on this series.
Yeah, she was. Yeah. She's a great writer, man. I'd love to see more stuff written by her. You know, she could write anything.
Yeah.
I mean, she was writing, you know, a martial artist and a power man in Harlem. And it was all really good. And they travel from Harlem to Kunlun every 5 minutes. And yeah, brilliant stuff. My favourite page is the horizontal panels, like the one you just described, where he decides to blow it up, and you get that silent page almost, and it's so well done. I'd love to have that on my wall, man. It's just a lovely bit of acting and lighting, and you know, their heads bowed as soon as it happens, and then even just you can tell he's angry in the small part of just his
eye
there.
His expression there means, oh dear, you know, there's going to be trouble here, you know.
And then the way that Friends and Palmer in the bottom, they angle the hill so they can, it's almost so they can fit it all in. So the buildings are slightly skew-whiff, but it gives it that sort of cinema verite sort of kind of coolness to it, doesn't it? It's got that strangeness. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it was just a practicality to fit it in a parallel, in a horizontal panel, but it's, it's quite something. Yeah, really good. And
it really captures the...
Sorry,
I was just going to say, it really captures the mood of the outside.
Yeah.
You know, the rain, the mud, you can practically feel them out there in the mud and the rain and everything. That's a good thing all the way through the issue.
I agree. The rain is so well done in
this. The difference between outside and inside.
Yeah, the rain, the kind of, we accept that this planet probably rains all the time or something like that. It's got that drenchedness to everything, isn't it? And that lush greenness.
Yeah.
It's really lovely done. And that last panel, with C-3PO is, I mean, why you don't see that all the time? That's a lovely panel, man. Really beautiful. And just the shadows in the back with their hoods up. It's just beautiful. Yeah, really good.
Yeah, it's a great ending.
Yeah, really good, man. I'm going to definitely read on, I think, from this. So I think it moves on to... I don't know what the next issue is. I got it on the app. But fortunately, it's all still on the app. I thought I was worried when you said that, but I thought, oh, it's... And I think the next issue is Joe Duffy, Ron Frenz, and Palmer and Mandrake do the finishes as well on this one. It's straight into Han Solo. First page, straight into Han Solo. Really good.
Well, it's funny you say that because between Empire and Jedi, for 3 years, Han Solo hadn't been in the comic. You know? They were having to write everything with him not being there. And so it was exciting to think, oh, you'll be back in the comic.
Yeah.
But then in Britain, as I was saying, they dragged it on so far that the early story, you know what, I've got them here, as I said. Yeah, over six issues, and so that last part of Ellie was in April 1984.
Right, okay.
So that's practically a year after the films come out.
Yeah.
Was the first time finally Han's back in the comic, and that's asking a lot of 11-year-old kids.
Yeah, and he was the cool shit for us fans, wasn't he? We kind of liked Luke. Luke
was
our brother, but he was the cool fucker, wasn't he? We all looked up to.
Yeah, of course he was. Yeah.
And
I still remember that the one you're talking about because it is the first panel is Han going, it's me, isn't it? He's actually saying to the reader, it's me, I'm back.
I'm back, look, the fun's going to begin. It's almost that, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful, man. That's so good. Oh, I love that. Yeah, that's really good. Good. Right, thanks for that, Dave. Let's pause for our sponsor and then we'll have a little talk about what you've got on at the moment. So now we're going to pause for a word from our sponsor. Are you the sort of person who avoids saying anything that they are really thinking? Are you the sort of the person who fawns over baby talk and has a sixth form level knowledge of politics and economics? Do you love rainbows and unicorns? Then why not join Twitter? I have to add the legal warning now. May cause loss of sexual appetite, anger management issues, and cause you to take so many photographs of yourself that you may cease to exist in the real world. Thanks for Twitter for that, for sponsoring this episode. It's very kind of them. So over to you, dude. So very kindly, you sent me a copy. You sent one to all of us, actually, on the Awesome Pod, of your new book, Mount a Rescue. Perfect bound. Another class bit of packaging here, my friend. So has this been a long time coming? This is a collaboration with some friends as well, is it?
Yeah, it is. I've got 18 artists.
Wow, okay.
That, you know, doing one-pagers. I think there's one two-pager. Right. I like to draw about two-thirds of it myself, and then I always like to get different artists that I know. In fact, some of them I don't even know.
Right.
I approach people, you know, and ask. And then they can say yes or no, you know. But some say yes, so they're in here. And I always like that because I've said before, but I write it and I picture how I would draw it, but then it comes back and they've changed it, you know. So it keeps it interesting for me as well.
Yeah, it's good. I've turned to the pub quiz page, obviously. One of my favourites by Mike. Mr. Sadaka. Does he own a kilt? I'm not sure.
Do you know, that was actually a real thing that happened to me at my workplace.
Right, okay.
Pretty much verbatim, that story happened. So he came in and says, do you have a kilt? And I went, yeah. Can I borrow it? Now, I don't know what you know about people wearing kilts.
I own a kilt, my friend. Yeah, I know. I've seen the Carry On movie. I know what's meant to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. So the idea of taking your kilt off and giving it to somebody else and they wear it and then you put it back on.
Yeah.
I says to him, no, of course you can't borrow it. You know, I exploded at the guy. No.
Yeah.
You know, fucking no. Of course not. Do you want my pants as well?
Hire a kilt from a shop.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, good stuff.
So that's...
Is there anyone who surprised you?
That was pretty
you?
Much a true story.
Just, you gave it, you didn't really know much about and they came through for you or anything like that? Oh, Alan Henderson's in there. I didn't see that one before.
Yeah. Oh, well, that was, I drew that one. That was a guest spot I did for Alan.
Ah, right. Of course it is. Yeah. I remember you saying about this before. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he said, I have guest people sometimes. I says, oh, can I do one? He went, yeah, if you want. So so I was right into that, and that was great. I coloured it for the book.
Right, I get you.
And you know, it's interesting because his penguin characters are so, if you know them, they're really iconic, yeah. Right? You just look and go, oh, there's Penguin. So when I was doing that storyline, I was thinking about changing the characters a bit, but I thought, no, I can't change them at all. Yeah. You know, that was an interesting thing.
Yeah, and you're right, they're iconic, but they can display emotion and stuff like that. But I think because I've read them so much, I always say to Alan, I've got a copy of his book in my downstairs loo. You know, it's because it's that, yeah, sort of shit. When I backed the last Kickstarter, he sent me the book and he sent me a bit of toilet paper and just wrote on it, just in case you need this. He thinks it's fine.
That was thoughtful of him, yeah.
And you've got the autumn. You did.
Have you seen his?
No, go on,
sorry, he does he's got like a load of different expressions that he uses.
Ah, right.
And he showed me it. He's got like a big sheet of paper and it's all the different expressions that he uses. He's got them all as a reference. I thought, look at that. It's always dead interesting to see how different people work,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, he's a good lad, isn't he? The and you've also got the page here that you did for our Awesome Comics 250 page that you stuck in. That's really
right.
Good, man. I was there, and you've drawn me as my lookalike, Stephen Segal. It's very kind of you.
I like the idea that you just took out a rifle in the middle of this conversation, yeah, and we're pointing
at
people.
We need a bit of drama in a comic, don't we? That's the thing.
That was like your character, yeah, you know? Yeah. Don't fuck with me. Don't fuck with me.
So,
the shittest comic.
Yeah, that competition. We're playing that. Next convention I see you guys at, we're definitely playing that. It's are you going to be doing... I really like this, man, and I really like what you're doing, and I always say this to you. I like the fact you just get on with it, and it's great stuff. And my little pile of Dave Robertson comics is growing, and it's always very kind of you to send them to me. But is the next project, I'm guessing, going to be a longer, more personal one, like the last one, you know, the librarian and stuff?
Well, I am homing in on finishing up my Taybridge Disaster comics.
Right.
I think that might be the next book. I've been working on that for years. I work on everything for years.
Yeah, I know the feeling. Yeah.
I think it'll probably be 2021 I've put that out.
Okay.
But I'm already well into putting together stories for another collection at some point. But I do think I should do a longer one. I'll probably start thinking about a longer story once I've got the Taybridge Disaster.
Right. Did you want to explain to the readers what that is, or the listeners what that is, rather? Yeah.
Hmm. The Taybridge Disaster was a real event that happened where they built the longest bridge, you know, in the world, and it was this technological marvel, and then it collapsed. And it's right beside Dundee, yep, you know. And I've always been interested in it. I don't know why. But I just started making these. I do it like it's a newspaper strip, so it's generally three panels,
right, okay,
with a bit of information about what happened, and then something that I think about it maybe, and then just whatever I feel like putting in. You know, to go back to the Star Wars comic, it was a matter of some excitement to me that the guy they were looking for was called Tay Vanis.
Ah, okay.
Tay. Yeah, but that was a wee connection to me being 10. I went, oh, T.
Like the bridge. T. Yeah, yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. So I've done about 24 pages of that. I'll probably do another few, finish it. I've got an ending in mind, a sort of final word on
right,
that.
Right, okay.
I'm thinking about, maybe I shouldn't say, but well, because who cares? I'm thinking about changing the format, and you know how you get newspaper strip collections, and they're not like they're long format,
sort of like,
you know,
a landscape format, you mean, that sort of thing. Yeah,
yeah, that's, yeah, right. So I'm gonna look into doing that for the next,
I think,
book,
that's quite fun.
Favorite
you used to
disasters.
See that more, didn't you? You used to see that quite a lot with those.
Yeah,
I think what, yeah, I was jonesing for is the Giles collections. Do you remember them?
I think you can still pick
them up quite cheaply. I saw someone somewhere in the West End that was selling them, and they're some lovely cartoons, just sort of single drawings, but very beautiful, beautifully sort of drawn, and political often, and socially relevant and stuff like that. And yeah, I like all that sort of thing, man.
I think they've got a big fan. There's a lot of people like those. There used to be a guy who ran a secondhand bookshop here in Dundee, and he had everything going in there, books, comics, everything. And I remember saying to him, what got you started? And he said, oh, the Giles books.
Okay, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's good stuff. So the podcast was on. You've just done an episode which I've downloaded today called Heavy Comics. So is that I take it that's about sort of more serious issues, is it, and stuff like that?
Yeah, it's heavy. It's actually one that I was thinking, do we want to do this? I said that. I might have even said it when we were talking about it. And I thought, do we want to do this? I mean, it's heavy. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but we did it. And it was heavy. And it was, you know,
sometimes it needs talking about. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
What? We did have a laugh as well.
What else you got planned on the pod, you know?
On the pod? You know, just right. This is going to be no use to you whatsoever. But just today, I had an idea. And I thought, hey, let's do that.
Right.
You know? So I wrote to the guys and says, hey, why don't we do this?
Yeah.
And three of the four of them wrote back and said, yeah, let's do that.
Good.
So I'm happy to tell you, but we're going to be doing that. And I'm excited.
Oh, good.
About
I'm
it.
Glad that you're doing that. That's good news.
I'm sorry. All will be good. Revealed.
Yeah. That's a nice little tease for future episodes. There you go. Yeah.
When that happens, you'll be able to go, I remember you talked teasing. About that.
It could be anything now, couldn't it? Whatever happens now, we'll think, you know, that's what it is.
Yeah. But do you know, I know the next topic, I think, is kids' comics. Okay. Kid comics aimed at kids. So we're going to do that.
Well,
that'll be good.
Dino on your doorstep. Just pop in.
Yeah, I'm going to bring my Ewoks annual. I'm going to order it and get it.
Yeah, exactly. I've just ordered a load of Star Blazers. I'm awful for ordering stuff off eBay. I'm such a knob.
You know, Star Blazers are just... the amount of times I sit and fill up my basket with Star Blazers thinking, I need 46 issues of Star Blazer that I don't have. And then I kind of slap myself and go, stop it. I mean, I've got like maybe 30 or 40 of them. They're just great.
Yeah, I've only got sort of 10, 15 maybe or something like that. But you can see the geezer as well because I bought a bucket load of them off eBay this morning, ordered them. And you can see the geezer was quite happy because he emailed me straight away saying, I'll post these today, Tony. I'm thinking, you're keen to get rid of them. I'm clearly a mug here. What's going on? But,
Oh, no, you'll enjoy them, though. They're great, aren't
I think
they?
So.
Ian Kennedy artwork. Yeah, you know, can't go wrong. He painted a lot of the covers and everything. Exactly. Great.
Dude, another great episode. Thanks for that, man. I always enjoy talking to you. It's always fun. Where can people look for you and find and buy your stuff?
You can look for me on... FredEggComics.com, and there's a shop, and Mountain Rescue's on Comic House, as well. If you join Comic House, and you can read it there or order a print copy. And you know, even just last night, I thought, why don't I just sell Mountain Rescue on eBay?
Oh, right, that's a good
idea. So I put up a copy on. Yeah, I just stuck it up on eBay. Buy it now.
Yeah, good stuff. And people,
there you go. So there's a hint.
That Comic House is just an app to read things digitally, but I know Dan sells his Vanguard trades through Comic House and stuff like that. It's worth thinking about. If you don't want to splash out on a big cartel shop, you can stick them on Comic House and sell them through there. And they only take like a couple of pennies or something, I think. When they, you know, you've got to send them, but that's the market. That's the shop for you. It's a great idea. Yeah.
It's definitely another good venue for doing it.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, definitely may as well, won't you? Thanks, man. You can find my stuff at neveronanything.bigcartel.com or at tributepress.bigcartel.com. Dave, I'm going to say goodbye to you and we're going to continue talking in a second. Thanks, man.
Thank you.